All right, it's another Wednesday night, and you are in the zone here on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Dave and Glass with you again on another Wednesday night. We are, as always, taking your phone calls at 333-2665. Plenty to talk about tonight. NBA Finals tip off tomorrow night, Thursday night, as the Cavs head out to Golden State to start it all out. LeBron James against a deep and very talented Golden State team, the best team in basketball this year. So that's getting way underway to tomorrow. We've got FIFA, international soccer, going crazy in all kinds of directions. We're going to spend the second half of the show talking about that and bringing in an old friend and Indiana connection, former Indiana goalkeeper and assistant coach and current Stetson head coach, Ernie Yarborough, will be joining us tonight. We'll talk about all the things going on with Sepp Blatter and FIFA and many different people going down over there. Sepp Blatter resigning just this week, and several indictments coming down. So a lot to talk about with regards to the international soccer game and games off the field that have been going on for many, many years. But we start tonight with an off-the-field plan for IU basketball that should hopefully pay some dividends when it comes to on the court during the course of this next coming season, as about a month-long recruitment of Max Bielfeld, a to-be fifth-year senior player from the University of Michigan. He's a graduate of the University of Michigan, was released by John Beilein and the University of Michigan about a month or two ago after completing his coursework and, as I said, graduating in 4 years. Eligible to go anywhere and received a waiver to be able to go within the Big Ten to another Big Ten school. He has chosen Indiana University. So the 6'8", 250-pound power forward slash center, whatever you'd like to call him, he'll be playing for IU next year. And, of course, with the dismissals of Devin Davis and Hunter Mascara-Perea, this becomes a nice piece to add in the month of May or June for the Hoosiers, who needed some of that front court depth that they thought they had gotten taken care of when they brought in Thomas Bryant, who's a freshman. But Glass, here we have a fifth-year senior. He's going to be 22, 23 years old when he comes in here. 6'8", 250. This guy is not Hakeem Olajuwon, but he is a player that I think you can see being very useful for this team, who desperately needed some skill and some minutes at the very least in the front court coming into a season again when they're kind of overloaded in the backcourt with wings. The depth not so good up front. I'm not saying this solves everything, but it certainly helps the team out.
Thanks to Fred Hoiberg for taking the Bulls job, because it sounded like from all the tweets that Bielfeld was putting out that he was going to wait to see how that shook out before he was making any decision. So it wasn't like he ran to Indiana University, pushed everybody out of the way, and jumped in there first. But he's here now, and that's what's important. So whatever he says, of course, is what he's going to say, because this is a great institution. It does have a great business school, and it has some interesting things going on the basketball court as well. The reason you like the move is quite simply there will be no assimilation period. He knows what Big Ten basketball is like. He's played Big Ten basketball minutes for the last however many years. You can talk about it. You can practice it. You can try to replicate it. It doesn't work until you do it. He's played at East Lansing. He's played at the Barn. He's played at Nebraska. He's played at Ohio State. Let's just check all the boxes off the list. Yep. And he's done it more than once. You can't get that from an 18-year-old kid at reclassifies. You can't get that from a junior college kid that comes in. No matter how much you tell him, no matter how much you practice him, you can't replicate the physicality. You can't replicate the practice. You can't replicate the games. You can't replicate how the games are called. So that, in my opinion, is the biggest advantage. All of that smashed into one point is the big – that's why this is a big deal, because you're not teaching a kid on the fly. You are not giving a kid a crash course on how it works. He knows how to travel. He knows how to get his classes done. He knows how to do his laundry. He knows all that stuff that you wait for freshmen to figure out. You don't have to wait for it. And this isn't a knock on Nick Zeisloff. Nick Zeisloff was fine. He was a streaky shooter. He was at Illinois State. Nick Zeisloff was Nick Zeisloff. He was a junior. This kid's a senior. Okay, difference. Nick Zeisloff played 2 years in the Missouri Valley. This kid's played 4 years in the Big Ten.
He understands the physicality of the
there
Big Ten,
is
too.
A difference. He knows how to get in the weight room. He knows what to eat properly. He knows how to do all that because he lived Big Ten basketball for 4 years. He lived at a good program in the Big Ten. If you remember, Michigan was in the national championship game just a couple of years ago, and we're in regional finals.
Two Big Ten championships in 4 years.
There you go. So he knows all about winning. He knows about doing it the right way. He knows about doing it the big time way, which is Big Ten basketball. The other thing that you don't have to worry about, you don't have to worry about him putting on weight. You don't have to worry about him getting acclimated to working hard. You had to do all that stuff at Michigan to play. Beeline doesn't. Beeline and his relationship has nothing to do with what he did on the court. And that somehow ended. It ended in such a way he got a waiver to play in the Big Ten. Nobody's reported why that is yet, but that doesn't
happen.
They
had to get a waiver for that.
That doesn't happen very often at all. So there had to be some extenuating circumstances there. But if you read some of these articles, it sounded like before the year started, he was told, if it doesn't work out, you're the guy that you've got your 4 years, and that's how it's going to be. Mm-hmm. So all that taken into consideration, you couldn't find probably a better fit on the everything but sheer talent scale. You got the guy you wanted. It's a front court guy.
Right.
You wanted the guy you got with some bulk. You got a guy with experience and all those other what do you want to call those?
Intangibles?
Attributes, intangibles. That comes with it, that you don't have to take practice time to worry about what he's going to be doing. The biggest learning curve for him will be what? I don't think much. Michigan, not known as a
system.
Strict defensive style. It's we always laugh when Indiana plays Michigan. We say, geez, they can just play this
get
kind of
down,
style
right.
every year. It'd be great. So that offensive transition isn't going to come to him as a big surprise. There is no other side of the ball defensive. This isn't going to Louisville where you've got a, hey,
yeah, right.
This is
you got to run for 35 minutes,
and you're going to throw up all over yourself. It's not that at all. So the fit on paper, just like everything on paper at this time of the year, you're on Twitter like I am all the time. You ever seen one of these schools say, "Hey, we got a fifth year chance"? I don't know if that's going to work.
It's probably not going to help.
It's just not. Not what it's going to be. So of course it's good, but
carrying water bottles.
But what I look at it is, would you rather have that for 1 year, a 1 year rental, or take a chance late on a kid you might have to have for 4 years who just might not fit what you're trying to do, or doesn't get it quick enough, or his body gives out, or whatever? Because we've seen a lot of those other options. This is year three in a row with a graduate transfer, Evan Gordon. Zeislav was just a straight up transfer, wasn't he?
Yes.
He'll be a senior this year. So that was there a graduate transfer last year?
You know, I think he did graduate in 3 years.
He did? Okay.
I think.
He couldn't, because last year was his junior year. He couldn't have graduated.
Well, last year was his fourth year.
Okay, because he was a redshirt. Yeah. Okay, so three graduate transfers in a row. By now, you should have a really good system of putting that person in place.
Yeah.
And with all the external circumstances surrounding Bielefeld, it should be a really easy transition.
333-2665 is our phone number. I hesitate to use this word, but I will use it anyways. For this team and what it needed, I think this guy is a perfect addition at this stage of the game. Again, I say why be careful saying that, because again, he's not Patrick Ewing, he's not Akeem Olajuwon, you know, he's not Greg Oden, he's not one of these guys that's going to walk in the door and be an instant stud, huge playmaker for the team. And to be fair, there are enough talented kids, recruits that came in with a lot of accolades, that you hope to be those guys more so than this guy, that you fit in a piece. And as you mentioned, the attributes that are so important to this team right now, it's still an inexperienced team. It's got guys with experience, but across the board, it's still got a lot of youth on this team. So adding a guy who's been around the block and on several occasions is a big addition. A big physical guy, a guy who is used to at least being more of a defensive and rebounding factor than he is a scoring factor, but a guy at the same time that can knock down a shot. I looked through his year to begin with. First of all, he played 430 minutes for Michigan last year.
He was sixth man of the year, wasn't he?
I'd have to check.
I think
on
I read
that
somewhere.
Averaged 14 and a half minutes a game, but in the last 15 games, which were all Big Ten games, including the Big Ten tournament, they played two games, and he averaged over 20 minutes a game. Averaged about five points a game, about 3.5 rebounds a game. I looked at this, and the minutes for the course of the entire year, he was a better rebounding guy per minute, if you will, than everybody on the Hoosiers team but Troy Williams. So from that standpoint, this team needs rebounding. We saw that, or certainly upfront help. It needs physicality. It needs size. It needs depth up front. It can certainly use experience, and it can use a guy that doesn't come in maybe as an entire diva that needs the ball all the time.
You wouldn't have brought him in.
You certainly don't think he's going to be that coming in the door. I think he's a perfect addition for this team.
Well, here's the thing you know about him just from looking at it far. With all the injury problems Michigan had last year in their backcourt and his lack of volume scoring tells me that's not his deal. What he has found out is he knows how to get get on the floor, yeah. and he knows how to stay on the floor.
He's had injury issues. That's yes. cost him. It made him redshirt. It cost him a lot of his first couple years after that, so he didn't have a lot of time out there. He was behind a freshman most of last year. The last three games he started and played 31 minutes in two of them and 21 in the other one. In those 15 games that I looked at, he had this is an unofficial stat, an unofficial Novak stat here, almost triple doubles. Okay, these are big guys that are scoring 7-8 points, 7-8 rebounds kind of thing. He had like six of those, you know, and some of those are in 14 minutes, 18 minutes kind of thing. He was reasonably productive in the minutes that he played there. As you said, to be fair, he was not, you know, the obvious choice at center with a team that was lacking size up front in that case. So you can't expect him to walk in the door and be your starting center and play 30 minutes.
But that was my point. He will be the role player you need, and you don't have to talk him into it. You don't have to massage him into the position. And the other thing it helps is maybe you don't have to throw Morgan and OG right into the mix,
exactly.
Well, or force them into it. Now, injuries are going to dictate what happens with that anyhow. And Bielefeld's other thing, he'll know how the game is called. He's not going to come in and get two fouls in 3 minutes because he's trying to block shots, because he's reaching, he's out of position, he's slow to the rotation. He's had to go through all that. He's already played at this level and played at that speed, and that does translate into minutes. Like I mentioned, he knew how to get on the court at Michigan with some really good teams, and he knew how to stay on the court and get some minutes, Dave, and it's not by fouling. It's not by being out of position. It's not by taking ridiculous shots on offense. That's what freshmen do. Leave that to them. We've got enough young kids who've got some really good ideas that just don't execute sometimes.
Sure.
We don't need to add any fuel to that fire. And the other thing is maybe I think the role player is important because there is a guy or guys that find a way to get on the court by just getting garbage around the hoop, by doing exactly what they're told and not screwing up. And that's not a knock on anybody that was here or is going to be here, it's going to play. But if they tell you to go stand over there and you can't get that right, the rest of it's kind of iffy. So he knows all that. He's ahead of that curve. And again, if he's smart, if he knows how to put a body on a guy without committing 100 fouls, which it looks like he knows how to do, those are little things that are going to help Indiana moving forward. You don't need another guy that needs 15 shots
a
game.
That's exactly right.
You don't need it. What you need is cover for Bryant. What you need is cover in the front court, and you can never, ever have enough rebounding. We saw that 2 years ago when Indiana went 17-15. And was really good at rebounding.
This team
imagine surrounding it with some offensive players like they're going to do
this
now.
This team up front, three freshmen, OG, Morgan, Bryant. It's got Colin Hartman back there. It's got Emmett Holt. It's still very young, so it can use this veteran. We got to take a quick break. 333-2665 is the phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 333-2665 is our phone number. Got Reds baseball coming up tonight after the show, 7 o'clock. Got them Thursday and Friday, also 7 o'clock. Philadelphia tonight and tomorrow in Philly. And then San Diego comes to town on the weekend. Again, 7 o'clock Friday, 4 o'clock Saturday for Reds baseball. Starting tomorrow night, we have the NBA Finals kicking off, tipping off in Golden State out in Oakland. And the Golden State Warriors, first time in a long time they've been in the finals.
40 years.
LeBron James has been a bit of a stalwart in them in recent years with a couple different teams. He's back with Cleveland this time around. Is this team better in Cleveland than the first time around?
Absolutely, by a mile. Not even close. They got guys that can score. In the NBA, you got to score. You can't lock down guys defensively. Ask Tom Thibodeau. Just cost him his job in Chicago. Best defensive team in the last 3 years in the league. Get guys hurt and you can't score. You can't beat anybody. They got eliminated in two playoff games. One with 69 points and one with 73 points. Elimination games. You can't. That doesn't win.
Mm-hmm.
And so Cleveland's first incarnation with LeBron had a bunch of role guys that just you can't remember right now.
It asked an awful lot of LeBron.
You can't remember who they were. You can't remember what they did. But now you've got guys. Kyrie Irving's going to be an all-star in the league if his tendonitis is okay. J.R. Smith is a marksman. He's a mercenary. He knows exactly what it takes to be in big. He's not afraid of taking any shot, let alone any big shots.
Yeah.
You throw in Iman Shumpert, again, a guy that knows his role, can play defensively. He's knocked down four threes the last two playoff games, so he's not one-dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
Dellavedova, you can just start checking guys off on that list at Cleveland that have no problem being second fiddle to that guy, but can contribute. It seemed like the old Cleveland teams would D Tristan Thompson, another guy comes off the bench, gets a million rebounds, and gets all the garbage points. But the other team in Cleveland, I didn't remember. They won 60-something games because, yeah, they were good. There's no question about that. But you just those guys didn't jump off the page as, wow, it was here's LeBron one-on-one for the last 5 minutes, and if he beat you, he beat you, and if he didn't, he didn't. Now you got options, and they're going to need every option because this isn't going to be a series where you're going to roll over anybody, and you're going to play a lot of games, and you're going to play a lot of minutes. And we talk about series not even really starting until the road team wins a game. Well, Cleveland will get two cracks at it in a team that's 46-3 on their home court this year and have home court advantage. Nothing should come easy. That is the truth of it all. And Cleveland has more parts this time around. LeBron obviously is older, wiser, smarter. And that doesn't hurt either, but Golden State is historically good. That's the problem. Golden State's numbers, if you add up all their playoffs, they've lost one game.
Yes, this team is
67-15 on the other side of that.
Historically, statistically.
So you throw in
crazy.
However many other, what is that, 4-4-4, there's 12 more in one loss. That's awfully, awfully good because remember, the West was the hard conference,
right.
And they broomsticked it quite efficiently
now,
with their offense and their defense.
I know it's a long ways off since this happened, but January or February, the two teams got together because they play twice a year.
That's it. One and one. Home and home.
But LeBron James went a little crazy, and the Cavs ended up winning. I believe that game was in Cleveland when it happened. Stephen Curry, the MVP for Golden State, he and Klay Thompson can just shoot lights out. But it might come to that front court and how much they can kind of handle LeBron James and certainly beat around
LeBron
James.
Nobody handles LeBron James. And you know what? No one stops Steph Curry either. So you got two guys, I don't want to say going to cancel each other out. But the point of the matter is the team that's going to hit the most shots wins. It's not going to be a team that grabs the most rebounds. It's going to be a team that hits the most shots. And that's what Golden State, I think, has a little bit more advantage to. The style they play, the way they share the basketball, they have more pure shooters. Now, LeBron gets streaky. J.R. Smith can get streaky.
Sure.
Shumpert can get streaky. Irving, is he hurt? Is he not hurt? Golden State checked out. Curry's fine. Steph Curry's fine. Klay Thompson's cleared to play. So you've got those guys firing on all cylinders. The two styles will be interesting because the way you play in the East and the way you play in the West, James Harden's getting 45. Now they can't win.
Right.
Rockets couldn't beat him with him. You know, you get 38, 37, whatever it was. He scored at will, and they're like, fine, we're up 30. What do we care?
Well,
get as many as you want.
The West, I mean, the best teams in the West, you're talking 7, 8, 9 guys that are true pros. I mean, stud pros.
And they went through them all.
Golden State brings off Andre Iguodala, Sean Livingston, Leandro Barbosa to play minutes for this team.
All guys that have been around the block.
Yeah, guys that have contributed in significant ways in the past, and
the
bench keeps going.
And Azealia on the front court is 7 foot tall and know how to play. It's just you don't fluke it to 67-15. Just like the Cleveland team with LeBron that year didn't fluke it, I think 63 wins, whatever it was. You have to be good. It's just what's your style of good. Do you have to be great? Do you have to be this? Golden State moves the basketball. They spread the floor. They play. They pass the ball unbelievably well. They defend better than you think they do at least 3.5 positions. Curry's pesky on the ball. Thompson's all first team. Draymond Green's all second team. Mm-hmm. Bogut's all second team. Defensive. I mean, you got three guys that are 5 starters are on the all defensive team. That tells you what you need to know, and they're balanced. Good teams are balanced and get things going in the hole with Draymond Green, Harrison Barnes. Those guys can both shoot threes. So in today's league, Dave, there's really not a 5, a 4, a 3. They just play now. They spread them out and go, and you get after it, and you try to find the weakest link, and you try to exploit it. And you've seen Green go for 30-something. You've seen Barnes go for 30-something. You've seen Bogut get the hot. They can do that. They can spread you out. Iguodala's come off the bench and hit 7, 8 threes before. And the interesting part is going to be when Curry has the bad night or LeBron has the bad night, what does the rest of their team do? And for me, I'm going with the team with 67 wins and 15 losses because they have more options and and they probably have better players. But the will of LeBron will be the interesting part. He can't have two games where he goes 3 for 9 in the fourth quarter.
Right.
He usually doesn't, but he's going to get a little Draymond Green. He's going to get a little Harrison Barnes. He's going to get a little Klay Thompson.
And the nerve of some of these guys. I mean, you mentioned Shumpert and J.R. Smith in particular. Guys who have been around.
Guts of burglars.
They're not afraid of taking a big shot. shot. No, they're not. They got to hit them, obviously. That's the whole key to it.
And Golden State's a big favorite, 12-5 favorites.
Who do you like
to win? I think Golden State wins. I like the way they play. And the other thing is, you got two rookie coaches here, and Dave Blatt, is that it?
Yeah.
A great coach overseas. Give the ball to, he was calling out of bounds plays and not giving the ball to LeBron. And LeBron says, give me the ball. I mean, Steve Kerr's been around it. He knows what it takes to win championships. He's got all those pieces there. And I think that lines up for Golden State. As any neutral sports fan would want, you hope the series goes seven. And you hope it's a tight fourth quarter in the final game and the best team wins it and nobody loses it or is given away.
Cleveland needs a championship. It's been a long time, but I think Golden State probably pulls this one out. Unfortunately, they are the deeper and better team right now. We got to take a quick break. 333-2665 is our phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL.
We're brought to you this afternoon by Williams Brothers Pharmacy, healthcare pharmacy. They're a family-owned business offering personalized expert advice on a wide range of pharmacy services. 574 Landmark Avenue, Williams Brothers, committed to creating customers for life. It's like I first ever read that billboard. Yeah. It's terrible. And we'll thank our friends at J&S as well. J&S Locksmith, where you'll find everything for the residential or commercial outdoor technician. You can find them at 508 West 17th Street here in Bloomington.
And a reminder again, we have Reds baseball coming up right after the show, 7 o'clock. They're in Philly. They'll be in Philly on the air again tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. And then San Diego comes to town Friday, also 7 o'clock, and Saturday again, 4 o'clock here on WGCL. A lot going on in the world of international soccer, all kinds of things in the bad ways going on with FIFA right now. So we decided to talk a little international football and bring in our friend, former Indiana
coach buddy,
goalkeeper, former assistant coach, now the head coach of Stetson University, Ernie Yarborough. Thanks for being with us, Ernie.
Hey, great to be with you guys. Thanks for having me. Good to be back in Bloomington in some way.
That's right.
And, of course, it's all great stuff we get to talk about tonight, right? Indictments and bribery and all kinds of nefarious stuff.
Well, first of all, in following the world's game, every time that they get together, FIFA, the governing body of the international world of soccer, and you sit there and you look at it and they say, well, we're going to give a World Cup to Qatar. And you think, well, wow, there's no teams there. They don't have a team. It's 180 degrees. They don't have any stadiums. Is this that stupid? when that decision was made, who didn't say, well, that's a terrible idea? There were people that didn't even know that there was a World Cup saying, you can't play soccer there. I study climatology. You
something.
Can't do that. What's FIFA's problem, and why is this happening?
Well, I think it's obvious now you're seeing that there's been a lot of backroom meddling, if you want to call it that. Corruption is the word that's going around right now. But at the same time, I think I agree with you that many people couldn't believe the result and the way it went. But on the surface, you know, Qatar had their answers, if you will, in terms of air-conditioned stadiums and, you know, trying to move it to winter and doing some things to avoid those problems that we've heard about. But at the end of the day, it's just obvious that something happened to make things go in the direction they did. And from what we're seeing now in the last, you know, week to 10 days, it's been happening for the last 15 to 20 years at a level that I don't think anyone ever really knew about.
And it's interesting that that level kept going last week when the FIFA elections came around and Sepp Blatter won convincingly. So the member countries, which is one country, one vote, it's about as democratic as it gets. The U.S. doesn't get 68 votes because of its population or size. It gets one. They elected this guy because they didn't want anything to change or afraid things might change and the gravy train goes out of town?
Well, in essence, it's probably a little bit of both. You know, like everything, it meets somewhere in the middle. But the reality of the system is that FIFA has paid a large number of countries large amounts of money in a way they're supposed to. I mean, let's be honest, they do make a lot of money with the World Cups and different things they do. And they do, as a nonprofit, pay that money back to their member federations to the amount that it's equal shares for equal countries in the world. You know, America also doesn't get more money because they have more people. You know, Montserrat and Liechtenstein get the same $40 million for a World Cup that the United States does. And so when half to more of your countries are these little African, Caribbean, you know, small European nations that don't have anything else, and they're getting $40 million to their athletic budgets, of course they're going to want that to continue, and they're going to vote for the guy that's been giving it to them for 20 years.
Yeah, it's almost like a victimless crime, isn't it? What's the big deal, right?
Well, and for some of those countries, absolutely. You know, they're being given what they are packed to get in terms of the agreement with FIFA. And so they're saying, hey, look, this guy's been doing his job for us. We're not buying votes. They're not buying our vote. But the reality is when it comes down to the larger nations and the countries that want the competitions, there's going to be competition. And those countries have the resources, i.e. Qatar with 2022 and potentially Russia in 18 in particular, having the resources and the wherewithal to make what they want happen.
And you know, right now, Ernie, I mean, most of what we've heard in, as far as the allegations and straight up, you know, charges right now, people arrested, this has seemed to be much more about the rights to large competitions. And of course, the World Cup is the most obvious, but we've implicated or arrested even two heads of CONCACAF, which is the federation in this part of the world that the United States is part of, that has to qualify through to get to the World Cup. It's been gold cups that these guys are getting implicated for bribery, for rights that went to putting these on over 5, 6, 7, 10, 12 years, whatever it is. So it doesn't seem to me like the biggest issue that's being brought up is the bribery of who's getting the money and who's voting for who. It comes down to, you know, the money that's ancillary to these actual competitions, broadcasting rights, or as we mentioned, Qatar or Russia getting the rights to the World Cup. It comes down to those competitions.
It is. I mean, and what you're going to start to see, I think, the more and more these things are opened and, you know, indictments are read and different things are coming, different people start to flip, you're going to start to hear how deep the problem is. You know, it starts on the surface with the obvious, and as you just mentioned, now we're hearing today about Chuck Blazer and the Gold Cup rights, television rights. It's big money, and you know, soccer in this country, there was a great article about Chuck Blazer last year before the World Cup.
Yeah, in BuzzFeed. I read it this afternoon.
The 10% man.
The 10% man, absolutely. Great article.
He, in essence, created the soccer business and the culture of soccer business in this country through the 90s and into the 2000s. And
then, you know, FIFA hired him.
and then CONCACAF got their hands on him, and you know, he created the Gold Cup, and he created other competitions. And, you know, his 10%, right or wrong, legally, illegally, however you want to look at it, he was creating this model in this country that he was getting, obviously, done on top of him at FIFA as well. And I think you're right. I think this problem is way more prevalent at a lot larger levels in terms of the scope of it, than just the icing on the cake that you see with the World Cup.
Well, here's the other side of the coin. Well, so what? So what that they do this? We just want to watch soccer, right? We just make sure it's in the summer every 4 years, make sure everybody qualifies. It seems like every country that has gotten the World Cup, how's South Africa doing with all their empty stadiums? And mm-hmm. I won't even bring the International Olympic Committee into this because they've done such a fine job with everybody they've given.
Another similar story.
Well, exactly right. So is it a big deal? Is it a big deal because they're not paying taxes in America? Let's say America got the World Cup Qatar got. Are we even to the stage?
Are we about America getting the World Cup?
Yeah, if they would have won the original vote,
would this be
a problem?
I don't know. I mean, obviously, we were in that race. We were, I think, 14-10 was the deciding vote against us. And so obviously, there's a chance it would come. Now, with Blatter stepping aside, I think there's a lot more likelihood that could happen, or even that we get the next one in 2026. You know, when he won the election on Friday, with us being the country that opened the indictments and gone after everybody, I think there was a lot of speculation that we've put a nail in our coffin, so to speak, in terms of getting future competitions. To your original question of why do we care, I'm not so sure people care that the game is not going to be played. I think they care more about the integrity with which some of these decisions are being made and that the integrity of the game and the locations it's being played in are protected. And so, you know, you see a Qatar, for example, getting the World Cup, that doesn't help the game. It may help the game evolve in the Middle East.
It helps some people building some stuff in Qatar is what it helps.
Well, it helps the guys line
but
in their pocket.
It doesn't help the game and the play of the game, the actual event, because fans may or may not travel to that region because of the weather. They may or may not travel to that region from America for obvious reasons. And, you know, frankly, you're right. The only thing that's going to come of it is the country's going to benefit. And even still, from what I read recently, the city, not the stadium, the city that is supposed to host the World Cup final in 2022 doesn't exist.
Right, they haven't built it yet.
It's a plot of sand.
Which makes
in the middle of Qatar.
All the sense in the world.
And we've seen with the South Africa in 2010 and Brazil in 2014, hey, thanks for the 30 days, we're out of here. And now what are we going to do with all this stuff? So is it helping? Is it hurting? And my question, which I didn't ask you very well, we're talking to Ernie Yarbrough. He's the head coach at Stetson University down in Florida, former IU player assistant. The question I didn't ask very accurately was, when the original vote came up for the 2022 World Cup, if the United States would have won that vote, whatever the circumstances behind it, would there be federal FBI investigative into these practices right now, or would everybody have said, hey, we got the World Cup, let's just move on with things? Would this have been swept under the rug, for lack of a better term?
You know what?
What does your gut instinct tell you? Because I know you don't know this. You don't work for them. I'm just asking you as a fan.
My gut instinct is probably not.
Yeah, the cynical view, of course, has to
be. Know, but you've heard, to be honest, though, you've heard stories like this, whether it was Qatar, whether it was South Africa, now we're hearing
France
as
98.
Far back as 98. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've heard stories about the corruption at FIFA levels for quite some time. You know, I'm fortunate enough to know a lot of people involved at a pretty high level in the game in this country who now represent different committees on different things in the game. And, you know, you just hear stories from time to time of these people who have been involved with decision-making bodies that just aren't right. And, you know, to your question of whether or not this would have come to light, I don't know that it would have been forced through the way it is now, but I think there would have eventually been, whether it's now or after Blatter's, you know, would have been through this time, there would have been something that came out, i.e. what happened with the Olympic Committee in Salt Lake back in 2002. There was too much going on for it to not ever come out.
And here's the question, then we'll let you get going. Ernie, and thanks for being with us tonight. Sepp Blatter is resigned at this point. He's going to be around for a few more months. They're going to have another election. Do things really change with how FIFA does business? And you can extrapolate this, as we've tried a little bit, I guess, as far as the International Olympic Committee kind of thing. Is it really a leadership issue, or is this the organization and the way the organization's being run?
Before Chuck Blazer got there, the FIFA wasn't making any money. They're making some money. Now they're making ridiculous amount of money. So I get that part, but nobody wants to go back to the good old days. You don't want to go back to outdoor plumbing. You don't want to go back to black and white TV. You don't want to go back to rotary phones. And I don't think we're gonna strip this down and start over.
No, and I mean, you talk about FIFA prior to Chuck Blazer. You talk about the Olympic Committee prior to
Samaranch.
Some of the Olympics that have happened in the States in the years in the last 20 or 30 years. You know, you can talk about the NCAA and the proliferation of March Madness. It all comes down to television and who's watching and who's paying for it. Mm-hmm. And as long as you're talking hundreds of millions or even now billions of dollars for rights fees over the course of 8, 12, 20 years, there's going to be people doing things to manipulate how those rights are awarded, who gets them, who sees them, how. I mean, I'm dealing with it right now. You know, I have AT&T UVerse. And them and Fox Sports are having an issue with the MLS and U.S. soccer. And I've been told that it's because AT&T doesn't want to pay Fox Sports, and they don't want to pass it on to their consumer. Well, I pay extra to have that channel. Don't they already have my money?
That's right.
Sounds like it.
Shouldn't it go to Fox Sports? And I bought it to watch soccer.
Right.
And yet, every time I watch Orlando City, I got to watch it in Spanish because they're not showing it on Fox. But what's even funnier is, I watch it on a Fox soccer channel. It's just in Spanish and not English.
Now, Ernie, you were assistant here at IU for a few years here just recently. How much Adidas stuff do you have packed away in your closet that you haven't been able to wear yet?
Well, a lot of it was given away to friends back in Wilmington.
That's right.
So see a couple of people that you know me, and you might be able to find some. But we have an agreement with a different apparel company, so I keep my Adidas stuff to wear when I'm not on the job, so to speak. And I do have a few things with the stripes, and now a few things with a swoosh. So
there you go.
I can see it from both sides of the fence on that one, Dave.
All right, and just wrapping things up, moving forward. The likelihood of FIFA moving 2018 or 2022, in your opinion, is what?
I would say that 2018 is relatively secure.
I don't think you want to poke Russia.
Yeah.
Well, I think for a couple of reasons. You don't want to poke the bear.
It's only 3 years.
I think they have the capability to run it. They just had the experience with the Olympics, be it good, bad, whatever you want to talk about with that. I don't think it was a negative Olympics. And I think changing it now for 3 years, even the U.S. to get it within 3 years, that's a huge event to manipulate in 3 years. I do think something is going to come of Qatar. There are too many issues now with the corruption, with Blatter, with the human rights issues that are involved. I mean, more than anything, we haven't even talked about that.
Yeah.
There's an estimation that up to 4,000 people may die by the time those stadiums are built.
Because they don't have OSHA, they don't have any cares, they just need them built.
No, it's hot and it's dry and people are dehydrated and falling off large structures and it's just not a healthy. They've already had like 1,200.
Yes, it's not good, and they're all immigrants because no one lives in Qatar.
Slave labor,
right?
And
absolutely,
there's slave labor. So
that goes back to the corruption of getting the World Cup to line the pockets to build the city. Someone's making a ton of money off that. They don't care what happens after the game or the buildings afterwards,
no.
And I think is the saddest part of all of it. So the Gold Cup starts, or the Copa America is here in a couple of weeks. At least we'll have some soccer to watch there.
Yes,
right?
Big time. It's being played, I believe, in Chile. There's going to be some great football on display. You know, we got the Champions League final on
Saturday
at 2:30. The 6th. I'm going to go with Barca.
Oh, geez. Get out on that limb.
Shocking.
Get on out. You're going to take Messi, huh? They have a little Leo.
It's an interesting game, though, because you have two contrasting styles. And as one pundit put it recently, soccer and football are a lot more fun to watch when you see competing styles.
Yeah.
Yep.
Even though one of them may be quote unquote boring, at least the other one has to do something against it, and they're usually pretty attractive. So, I think Barcelona is the team to beat in that one, but Juve's done their job and has some great players, and Pirlo now rumored to be coming to New York at the end of the campaign for Juventus, and we'll see how it goes. And then obviously the Women's World Cup as well starts here on Monday for the U.S.
Yep.
And we're going to see some great football on the women's side as well.
So, on thanks to Sepp Blatter and his gang on AstroTurf.
It'll be nice to talk about the good stuff.
There's always going to be something to look at with the AstroTurf piece. It's unfair for the women to have to do it. I think they've made that argument. I think they're right about it. At the same time, I think FIFA's testing it, to be honest, because I think they're seeing more and more of those surfaces. And
you know what?
That may be the way to do it.
That would melt in Qatar. You know that, right?
It would.
That would melt.
They would have, the
that
field
would
surface would be unplayable.
That's right.
It'd be beach soccer.
It'd be
in
gooey.
Qatar.
Yeah. It would be gooey.
It would be gooey.
Ernie, thanks
Great
for
job,
joining
brother.
Us
appreciate
tonight.
It.
We appreciate it, and take care of yourself down there. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys. We'll see you in a few weeks when I get up there for camp.
Sounds
Very
great.
Nice.
Thanks. Ernie Yarbrough, current head coach at Stetson University, soccer coach. I was a former goaltender and assistant coach here under Todd Yeagley for a few years there, and a longtime IU guy. Glad to have Ernie on the show. We'll talk a little bit more about what's going on with the FIFA stuff. Again, this indictment today is very interesting. I'll read you some of the comments when we get back. 333-2665 is our phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Again, we got Reds baseball coming up right after the show in Philly, so don't go anywhere. Talking about FIFA and what's been going on there, of course, indictments and arrests made late last week or over the weekend to several folks that were on the executive committee or had other roles with FIFA or the particularly the Confederations CONCACAF and CONMEBOL. CONCACAF is what the United States is a part of. It's basically the northern half of this hemisphere. CONMEBOL is basically the southern half of this hemisphere. So still big deals. But today, This is actually a two-year-old plea testimony from Chuck Blazer, who was a former FIFA committee executive committee member. This is 2013 that he had this testimony. And what came out in this was just released, just unsealed by the court system today. It's pretty amazing. This is all a quote from here forward. Among other things, I agreed with other persons in or around 1992 to facilitate the acceptance of a bribe in conjunction with the selection of the host nation for the 1998 World Cup. Beginning in or about 1993 and continuing through the early 2000s, I and others agreed to accept bribes and kickbacks in conjunction with the broadcast and other rights to the 1996, 98, 2000, 2002, and 2003 Gold Cups, Blazer said. Beginning in or around 2004 and continuing through 2011, I and others on the FIFA executive committee agreed to accept bribes in conjunction with the selection of South Africa as the host nation for the 2010 World Cup. So he's talking about going back all the way to 1992. You remember 1994 is when the United States hosted a World Cup.
Well, let's be fair. Ask yourself this question. Why is he doing this?
Well, because he was doing this in testimony.
Caught.
Exactly. In a plea testimony.
He's pleading.
He pled guilty to 6 counts of tax evasion, 1 each of racketeering, wired fraud, conspiracy, money laundering, and willful failure to report a foreign bank transaction.
And he's going to tell you anything you want to hear to avoid doing jail time. So, again, you got to take it all with some grains of salt in all of this. But the thing is, money corrupts, power corrupts, hubris, greed. It's not changing. It doesn't change with a lot of things in this world. And it's just it's unfortunate. But what happened is FIFA got really rich really quick and decided, hey, we're the governing body of world soccer. The executive committee governs us, and we really don't have to answer to anybody.
No.
Oops. Maybe you should have looked into that just a little bit deeper. But
well, somebody finally did. I think,
and it was
part
the
of it.
Old
was willing
stars
to do it.
And stripes. And again, yeah. I've read enough articles that have said while Europe was happy to keep their head comfortably buried in the sand because they were all profiting from it.
Yes.
The guy that usually has to put the sheriff's badge on and do it is the guy that's doing all right on his own, doesn't need any help from anybody
that's
else.
That's right. Hey, folks, music means we got to head on out of here. We'll be back Monday, so tune in then. Maybe we'll talk about a Triple Crown winner by then. That'd be nice, wouldn't
no
it?
No chance.
No chance, Glass nope. says. There you go. So that's your verdict. But we'll talk to you Monday one way or another. You've been in the zone.